where entrepreneurs come to grow. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
What does it take to create a company that changes the way millions of people live and work? Well, Leah Sullivan answered that question when she founded TaskRabbit, building one of the most influential technology marketplaces of the past decade and helping shape the future of work. Today, she's investing in the next generation of entrepreneurs, exploring the impact of AI and challenging people to rethink the assumptions that limit innovation and success. So how did it feel to walk into that office at IBM and tell them that you were leaving and starting a new company in a market that really nobody had ever even heard of before?
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, it felt pretty good. And the context behind that was that, you know, I had spent 8 years there. I started out as a quality engineer, but I had a background and skill set as a programmer, as a developer, C++, Java programming. And, you know, I felt like at IBM, I was being pushed towards this more managerial track and not a technical track, which I wanted to be on. I think, honestly, they thought I would be good at managing people, which is, like, could not be further from the truth, I'll tell you, okay? I'm actually a much better engineer than I am at managing people. But when I had the idea for TaskRabbit, you know, I had sort of been talking to my boss and kind of pushing my way at IBM to do more technical skills development programming. I was really interested in the emerging technologies at the time, which is really what enabled TaskRabbit to be successful. Social technology, Facebook was emerging, location-based awareness through, you know, the iPhone. Everyone suddenly had a device on them 24/7 that was this mini computer. And so I was just really passionate about these emerging technologies, and I saw a future where real people in the real world could be connected in real time to get real things done. And so I was really, really excited about making that leap and, you know, felt very supported when I walked in that day and said, I'm ready to do something different.
So I have a question for you. I read your story on your website. I thought it was pretty funny that, what was it, 80 or 90% of the people wanted IKEA furniture put together.
I know. It was a constant foreshadowing. I tell you, from day one, IKEA furniture assembly was always kind of the largest category of jobs posted on the TaskRabbit website. And I'm not very good at assembling IKEA furniture, but in the early days, I was one of the original TaskRabbits. So I assembled some IKEA furniture in my day. And I can tell you, it's not easy.
So the question I have for you then, that was a brilliant move. Then you sold TaskRabbit to IKEA, right?
To IKEA. Exactly. Exactly. And yeah. So many years later.
So did you plan, were you thinking of the exit when you started TaskRabbit that you were going to plan to sell it someday?
I think as a founder, I always knew that I wanted to create something that was going to live beyond me. I knew that I wanted to have a product in the market, an innovation that was a legacy that didn't need me to exist. So that is how I was thinking about it. The idea of the exit and the particulars around it were not something that I had deeply thought about or planned.
How long have you been sort of outside the organization and what are you doing with yourself these days?
So I started the company in 2008. I sold it to IKEA in 2017. At that point, I jumped over to the investing side full time. So I'm a venture capital investor. I've been at a fund called Fuel Capital, where we invest in early stage tech companies across all kinds of different categories, consumer, software as a service, dev tools, infrastructure. And now I'm actually launching my own fund, my own firm called Precedent VC, which is focused on this next generation of companies that many of them are AI native that are really building new consumer experiences. So this next fund and this next iteration of my investing career will be focused in that arena.
That's interesting. How do you see AI influencing the future of work? Since you are an expert in labor and also an expert in software and AI, what do you see as the future of AI and employment?
I mean, we are sitting on the precipice of a massive disruption that is happening in real time. I think that we'll look back on this short amount of years, this 3 to 5 year period. And, you know, we'll look back on it like we do the Industrial Revolution or, you know, the Renaissance. It's going to be a massive, massive shift in humans and how we work and the future of work. I can tell you, you know, I am an expert in outsourcing things. That's why I founded TaskRabbit. And, you know, I see the parallels with AI as well. The way I work today is very different than the way I worked a year ago. I am outsourcing things in my own work and career to agents, AI agents, all the time. As I'm doing this interview right now, I have 5 AI agents that are, you know, working on research for me and spreadsheets and modeling and, you know, writing emails. An AI agent is, you can think about it, I think about it actually as like a little bot you can give some commands to. They're called prompts. You can prompt them. You give them some instructions, and then you tell them to go off into the world, into the internet world, and do some things for you. So it could be, hey, I need you to go into my email and create drafts for all the messages that are waiting for me to respond to right now. So that's an example of, you know, a very basic AI agent that people would be using today. And so the technology that we have available to us today with AI is just at the very beginning. I will tell you, there are products out there today, and I'll promote one here because I just love it, which is a company called Town. So if you look up a Town Assistant, you can go to the website, you can go on their app, on your mobile device. But if you download Town and you sign up for Town, it basically takes care of everything for you. You just connect your email, you connect your Google Drive, whatever you want to connect. It has all these integrations built in. And just with a couple clicks in the interface, literally my 4-year-old could probably do it.
I'm going to look into that. That's awesome. Yeah, we had looked into OpenClaw, which would be totally amazing, but I was really worried about the security concerns.
Yes.
And what I've heard some people saying is that they have 2 computers. So if they're going to use something online that's some sort of AI agent or something, that they'll do it on a computer that doesn't have sensitive data, like your bank account number and stuff on it, right?
Right.
Your passwords.
And you can also set up enterprise accounts with Gemini and Claude and others that, you know, have more privacy and protections built in.
Well, I have to say, working in a service business, I am certainly intrigued with the idea of having somebody draft emails for me, you know, a software do that. On the other hand, I do have sort of my own style of communicating. It's probably grammatically not perfect, but when people receive an email from me who know me, they know it's from me, right? And that's my thinking and not somebody else's.
Yes.
So trying to kind of take advantage of the systems that are out there, yet also maintain that personal piece, which I think is important for the relationship, is kind of a challenge. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that it's kind of analogous to handwriting a note in my mind versus typing it out. It's like when the invention of the typewriter, the invention of the computer, like all of these inventions and new technologies make us more efficient and change the way we interact with people. Like, when's the last time you sent a handwritten note to someone? I mean, I do it from time to time, but it's a very special case and thing, right?
Well, nobody can read his handwriting, so.
That's also a problem.
But I love the analogy. That's a perfect analogy. Yeah.
So I think, you know, I agree with you that we don't want to lose the personal relationship aspect of communications, but I think there are ways that AI can make us more efficient and more effective and still allow us to layer on top. I go in and edit all my drafts, right? And add the things and then send it off. And then maybe instead of taking me 10 minutes to write the same email, maybe it takes me 60 seconds to tweak it and then send it. So I think it's pretty powerful, and I remain open to the evolution and, you know, things that can drive efficiency. Obviously with TaskRabbit, it's something I really love.
And that's interesting that we're talking so much about AI, but TaskRabbit, for those who don't know what TaskRabbit is, people come to your house and put furniture together or do other things, like you expanded
anything.
It, right?
Yeah, that's right. Anything. You can outsource any small task or job to anyone. That's right.
And we used it. We've used it a couple times.
Yeah, we've for plumbing, electrical. There's just really, I think, almost any job that you can imagine. There's mm-hmm. probably somebody on TaskRabbit who can do it for you. And mm-hmm. I think, as I recall, there's reviews too, right? So if mm-hmm. you're thinking about hiring somebody, you can look at the reviews. They have a reputational score. And that can help you make the decision about whether this person's a good fit or not, right?
But you still That's need right. humans. I mean, maybe someday robots will be able to do that, but I kind of mm-hmm. doubt it because
it's pretty far off, I think.
they break and they, you know, they screw up all the time.
I want a robot that goes to the refrigerator, gets me a water, and then brings it over to the sofa.
No, you want a robot that gets you chocolates.
And chocolate and water.
You could probably train a dog to do that, too.
So. If we have cats, can we train a cat?
Yeah.
So what kind of companies are you investing in? When you look into your crystal ball, that's what investors do, right? You mm-hmm. you maybe invest in 10, and maybe you hope one of them really hits and is a unicorn. What are you investing in? What do you see happening?
Well, you're right. It is a hits business. So you make a lot of bets, and then you hope that a few of them pay off. So it's high risk, high reward. It's something I actually do really love about the industry. And what I'm seeing right now is, you know, this disruption happening across all consumer experiences and categories, but I am seeing mm-hmm. a lot in the healthcare space. So mm-hmm. the first two deals in my fund have both been in health and wellness. One is in mental health and therapy, utilizing an AI native messaging layer on the back end to aid in therapy situations and communications. And then the other one is in the women's health space, a company called Conceive, which is a telehealth service that partners with fertility clinics, IVF clinics, and postpartum care centers to help patients and new moms have additional support. And that telehealth service utilizes AI on the back end as well, just to be more efficient. They have a human in the loop, of course, but it just helps with efficiency.
Yeah, it would be interesting if some of these systems were able to elevate and alert your awareness around communications where maybe a more human intervention is appropriate.
Yes.
And where it's not so necessary, maybe fall back on, you know, more standard AI types of communications that are created by a computer, because it kind of does go both ways. I mean, I have to say, in my experience, there are times when I should have intervened personally, but mm-hmm. I didn't, as opposed to just making everything sort of an AI communication. But if there were ways to help point some of those things out, I think that could be a way to sort of integrate the human and the AI workflow.
Well, what's interesting too about the space is, I don't know if you all are familiar with the Gottman Institute up in Seattle. The Gottmans, it's this therapy center, a famous therapy center, they can tell with over 95% accuracy whether or not a couple will stay married or not based on how they communicate with each other. And this research has been done over the course of decades, and it's been hand-coded, handwritten, you know, manually created. And so now imagine taking all of that research from the Gottman Institute and applying it to an LLM, a large language model, which is what AI uses to learn and to interact. And then in real time, maybe over text message, maybe it's over email, maybe it's over voice, over the phone, the AI is detecting, hey, maybe these two are not communicating well. Maybe we should
intervene. I'm in trouble now. That's all I have to say.
I'm just throwing it out there. It may be something to look into. I don't know.
Are you suggesting that for us?
I would never. I would never.
No, us.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
I thought you were maybe dropping a hint or something.
Like, need a hint on how to communicate better? Well, you know.
No, you tell me.
I mean, depends on which Richard I'm talking to. There's nice Richard and grouchy Richard, and I never know which one's showing up on any given day.
Well, don't tell the Institute, because it's going to come back to me in from my AI text, right? You know?
So that's detecting a problem, but then I'm assuming that they give them tools to fix the problem.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Oh, okay. Yes.
I mean, it's kind of freaky to get a message from the Gottman Institute. Your marriage is doomed, you know? And it was like, I was having a good time, you know?
Well, I'm going to tell AI on you if you don't behave.
No, that's great. So of the companies you invested in, which one's your favorite?
You know, a parent never has a favorite child. So let me start there. But let me say, there are companies that I think have been highly impactful and, you know, are doing amazing things. One company I'm very excited about is called Mi Salud Health. My father's Puerto Rican. I am Latina. And this company basically goes into employers that have large Spanish-speaking populations and offers them telehealth services through their platform. The employers are paying for this on behalf of their employees, and it's made such a massive impact as far as quality of health services, patient care, and delivery. And so I think that's just an amazing company. It's an amazing business, for one, but it's also doing great in the world. And so I like companies that have that, what I would call maybe a double bottom line profit, you know, angle to them.
Yeah, I think I saw on one of your podcasts where it was either you or one of your guests commented that the U.S. health system is, on the one hand, the most highly skilled and, you know, really is has so much to offer on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's really screwed up. And, you know, that's been my experience. I mean, the science and the technology are amazing, but on the just on the operational level, so often things could be done so much better. So maybe AI is a solution to this. So we are with Leah Sullivan, founder of TaskRabbit, the amazing Find Your Worker software program and app. And we'll be back after this.
You hear that? That's the sound of uncertainty lurking under your hood. You know the feeling. I know I do. That sudden sinking sensation when you see a check engine light or your car unexpectedly breaks down and you're faced with sky-high repair bills. It's time to shield against unexpected repairs with CarShield. CarShield is America's most trusted auto protection company and has an A rating with the Better Business Bureau. Don't let the fear of a breakdown keep you up at night. Trust the Shield, CarShield, and say goodbye to terrifying repair bills and hello to peace of mind. Your plan also comes with 24/7 roadside assistance, courtesy towing, rental car options, and so much more. Don't wait till it's too late. Call CarShield now before a breakdown. Protect your wallet. Protect your car with CarShield. Get our best protection ever. Call now. You'll thank me later.
800-261-2176. 800-261-2176. That's 800-261-2176.
Have you outgrown your health insurance plan or just not happy with what you're paying for? The number one reason we all change our health insurance is price. Are you paying too much for your health insurance? Would you like to have better coverage at a better rate or at little or no cost to you? Your life needs are always changing, but have you done anything to improve your health insurance for you and your family? Health insurance laws and coverage are always changing and getting better. It's impossible to do all the research yourself, but now it's all done for you for free. So regardless of your age or medical condition, take a few minutes right now and find out if you can save money or even qualify for zero cost health insurance in your state. Call now.
Paid for by Cheaper Health Insurance. 800-652-1470. 800-652-1470. 800-652-1470. That's 800-652-1470.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
And our special guest, Leah Sullivan. And Leah, you have a podcast and a book coming out called Breaking Precedent. Curious to know what that's all about.
Yeah, so I started with the podcast a couple years ago now. I became sort of obsessed with people just across industries, across categories that were doing things differently, that were setting new precedents in their fields. So the podcast is not just business and tech people, but it's artists and activists and politicians. And from there, it evolved into a book proposal. So the book will be out next summer. It's called Breaking Precedent. And part of the book is my TaskRabbit story, you know, how we shifted the future of work, helped create the gig economy. It folds in other people's stories as well. And then it gives readers a framework that I call rebel logic, if they're trying to break through something, how they can apply rebel logic to their thinking and build up a toolkit to break through and set new precedents in their own field.
Sounds really good. Do you interview people on your podcast then?
I do. Yes. I've interviewed a retired Supreme Court justice. I've interviewed an astronaut who went to space on a Blue Origin rocket. I've interviewed the artistic director of the San Francisco Ballet, and then many, many business and tech people as well.
What do you talk about with them? Do you try to get down to the nitty gritty of how they think? What do you guys talk about?
Yeah, I really am. I'm looking for stories of what was their path that led them to break that precedent and set a new one. And oftentimes it starts very early in childhood, and there's moments that they can pick out from the very beginning or influences they had around them that really shaped their thinking early on. And other times it's, you know, just a massive pivot, a massive career change, a massive path that really leads them to the new way of thinking. So it's really interesting to hear all the different stories and the different paths along the way.
In your experience, are there commonalities in what motivates people to, you know, take a different path? Because it takes a lot of energy and it involves a lot of risk. And depending what you want out of life, I guess, sometimes it can be easier just to kind of go with the flow. Some people just seem really motivated to chart a new course.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I think back to my own life and to all the people I've interviewed, I think, you know, there's no precedent that's too large or too small. And I'll give you an example. You know, I was the first woman in my family to go to college. That was a new precedent in my family to break through. You know, also founding TaskRabbit and helping shape the gig economy, obviously a big precedent there as well with lots of impact. So, you know, I think that depending on people's circumstances, they have built in their DNA some of the traits and some of the criteria and some of the patterns that I see that enable them to break through. Some of those things are having an outsider mindset, outsider thinking. Now, do you have to be an outsider to think that way? No, but you may have to actively shift your thinking to become an outsider if you want to look at things with a different lens.
So were you an outsider? Did you feel like an outsider when you were growing up? You know, joining IBM is they have a conformist culture, right?
That's true.
Or at least,
yeah, no, that's true. And I was one of the few women, right, a technical women on my team, and being Latina as well. My father's from Puerto Rico. And so, you know, there weren't a lot of other people that looked like me or, you know, had a similar upbringing in the environments, in the rooms that I was in.
So did you feel that they treated you differently or reacted to you differently? Did you feel like you saw things differently than the way they saw things?
I definitely saw things differently. I wasn't always treated differently, but sometimes I was. You know, as an example, I can, you know, share when I was at IBM, I remember being given this project. It was this big chunk of code that I had to deliver. And I was really, really proud of the clever way I had built it and how I had delivered it. And, you know, I walked into my boss's office, who was highly technical, and I was really excited to walk him through all the things that I had done. And so I did that and I showed him. And the first thing he said to me, he kind of pushed back his chair and he said, "Wow, Leah, you're really ambitious." And I thought, well, that's great. Like, having ambition's a good thing, right? But he just kind of paused. And the longer he paused, I realized it was not a compliment. As you said, IBM can be kind of a conformist culture. And I think what he was saying to me was like, don't stand out. Don't try so hard. You know, you don't need to do things differently. So, yeah, I think that was a moment, at least at IBM, where I realized, you know, maybe I didn't fit in there. And maybe I was using some outsider thinking or a different lens to accomplish solutions. And maybe that wasn't the pattern that they were looking for there.
Well, can you think of anything in your childhood that may have influenced you to be outside the box and be this forward thinker? Or was it just the culture you grew up in, the family's dynamics? Like, why do you think you're so out there and so different?
I'm not sure. There was no one else in my family that, you know, was an entrepreneur or had started their own businesses. And, you know, as I said, I was the first woman in my family to go to college. My father was in the Air Force for 35 years. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. But I do remember a moment where my father came home from work one night. I was 8 years old, and I remember asking him what the highest role in a company was. And he told me it was being a CEO, a chief executive officer. And he explained to me what that meant. And I thought that sounded pretty cool. And so I started my first company at 8 years old. It was a recycling program at my school called Pollution Solutions. And so I think I just liked being the boss. I think I liked being the boss. And so maybe that was the drive from the young age, is like, I just wanted to be the boss, and I had ideas. I wanted to be the leader. And, you know, I think my parents supported that and sort of egged me on. So that was a good thing.
Well, one thing I think that Leah, for our listeners, is pointing out is that if you are working in a corporation and you do make the move to entrepreneurship, you may already have been influenced by some conformity and some conformist ways of thinking. And so one of the challenges I think entrepreneurs can face, if they're coming from a corporate environment, which is, you can get a lot of really good training in a corporate environment, right? And work with good people. But you're also kind of taught to think in certain narrow pathways, because that's what the company needs to be successful. And then when you go to the entrepreneurial world, you have to shift your thinking, and you have to really do consider a lot more factors, or different types of factors that you might, you know, have to consider when you're in a corporate environment. And sometimes meeting with a lot of entrepreneurs, I sometimes see some that are still kind of struggling with that transition a little bit. And so I think it's just, if you're in that situation, I just think it's something to be aware of, right? And, you know, hopefully you can make the transition to entrepreneurship a little bit more smoothly.
Yeah, some people can't really, and they do end up going back into corporate. I do agree with you. I think it's kind of in your blood. Like, some people just know from a young age that they want to run things themselves, and they have a lot of creative ideas, and they want to start a company, or maybe not a young age, but maybe, you know, youngish age.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was growing up, to become a leader in a big company was, like, in my family, the only real career path. I mean, nobody ever really thought about trying to start your own thing, or that was crazy. Why would you do that? And I ended up doing that anyway. But ultimately, though, I think it was to my benefit. Right?
Well, there are entrepreneurs in corporations, but it's very hard to innovate inside the corporate structure, I think. And I mean, I have this story where I was working at this company and they had this problem they couldn't solve. And I solved it the first time I heard it, just because I had the right knowledge. And then the guy that had the problem kept coming to my office asking me to redesign his instrument for him. And his partner that he worked closely with kept telling me that I needed to quit work and stay at home with my children. So it was
not very helpful.
That was the corporate culture I left.
But, well, anyway, I think, you know, this has been great. Leah, how can people reach you and find out about your book and your other activities?
Yeah, everything's on my website, leahsullivan.com, and on Instagram at leah_Sullivan.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to the podcast and leave a quick review. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and X, and subscribe to our YouTube channel for bonus content.
Learn more at PassageToProfitShow.com.